My ambition after that trip to the Highlands was simply to see if Tasmania could make a really good single malt whisky.
We don't expect everyone to like these wines, so yes, there's some risk.
Drink more sherry, because that's when you can really educate yourself on what happens in maturation.
The thing is with Australian natives, you put them in a gin, the aftertaste invariably is just bitter and unpalatable.
I think the Irish whisky landscape is going to be wildly different over the next 5 years.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits, and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today.
Melbourne's Starwood Whisky has released smaller batch experimental products ever since the very early days. And some of these, like the ginger beer cask that we explored in depth with founder David Vitale in season 13, have gone on to bigger things. In 2020, the company created the Small Batch Experimental Series as a home for some of these one-off releases that haven't reached the scale required for wider distribution, showcasing new flavours, specialty ingredients, and unique barrels or distilling processes. In this special episode of Drinks Adventures, produced with the support of Starwood, head distiller Sam Slaney will take you through some of the most recent small batch releases, including Chardonnay Cask, Starwood's first whisky matured completely in white wine casks. It was also an opportunity for me to ask Sam some more general questions about the barrel program at Starwood, which has mastered red wine cask maturation to great success, claiming the title of most awarded distillery at the prestigious San Francisco World Spirits Competition in 2022. I should point out that the small batch series discussed in this episode is currently available to Australian listeners only. So if you are listening locally, the three most recent releases, Chardonnay Cask, Munich Malt and Toffee Apple, are all available to purchase direct from the distillery at starwood.com.au. Well, Sam Slaney, thanks so much for joining us on the Drinks Adventures podcast.
James, pleasure to be here. Great to be on the podcast finally.
Yeah, well, probably long overdue for David to step out of the limelight and put you to the fore on Drinks Adventures. You know, I mean, you're a part of the furniture at Starwood, aren't you? You've kind of been there since the very beginning, is that right?
Yeah, I was the first employee. I met Dave back in 2009. I was recently back in the country from Canada working at Grain & Grape homebrew shop in Yarraville, and Dave wandered in and we had a chat, and anyone who's spoken with Dave knows he's a particularly engaging guy and had a great vision. You know, I thought this could be fun, and I don't know what recommendation I'd give my former self if I was doing it again, but I'd probably still say yes.
And the range that we're talking about today, the small batch releases, that's been around since the very early days of Starwood, hasn't it?
Yeah, we've always been keen to experiment with different liquids and see what we can do, what's available, push the boundaries, make the most of our ingredients, make the most of our background as brewers and winemakers and beverage enthusiasts, just beyond, you know, whiskey. It's always been something we've wanted to do to keep us engaged and interested and keep our fans engaged and interested.
Tell me what have been some of the memorable releases in this series over the years, because, and also I assume that part of the way it's worked is that if a release kind of turns out to be really popular, then it can sort of get promoted out into, you know, your other ranges, like, for example, Ginger Beer Cask, I think probably started out as a small batch release, didn't it?
Yeah, it's a really good way for us to grow innovation, test it on a small scale, and then take it bigger if we want to. So Ginger Beer Cask is a great example. So that's grown beyond small batch. It's now in our projects and it's a pretty key release for us. I'm personally a really big fan of the Munich malt we recently released. That's got a few of my favorite things in it. I really like those like maltier styles where you've got this awesome kind of Munich malt involved. I think that was 60% of the grist. So you get a lovely development of bready flavors through. And then it was matured in bourbon barrels. And we love bourbon barrels at Starwood. We don't do them very often, but we find they really let the spirit shine and give a lovely tropical fruit, orchard fruit, kind of classic Starwood ester profile shines through, and the bourbon cask plays this lovely supporting role. So recently that's been a real favorite. A lot of the older fortified stuff, so that some of the double woods that we did early on were always pretty fun. Yeah, and some of those really classic kind of McWilliams or Pera barrels, large format, first or second filler, always awesome. So there's been some cool stuff coming through.
What's the sticky toffee apple? Because that's the other one that I believe is still currently available.
So we launched that last year. That was barrels that we got in from the US, apple brandy barrels, and then we transferred about some two-year-old whiskey stock into it and then left it for another 3 or 4 years in those barrels and those apple brandy barrels. So we love Calvados, we love apple brandy, we like that flavour profile. So it was cool to get that fruity, estery brandy character into the whiskey, and, you know, made a really cool, very apple forward in a positive manner. Lots of those like sweet, fruity brandy characters in that whiskey. So that's a pretty fun release.
And with the Munich malt, I'm sure there's probably a limited amount of what you can tell me here, but is there quite a lot of experimentation going on by Starwood in terms of the malt base that you're working with there?
We definitely like to experiment. Like, we've got a little 20-litre pilot brewery that we can play around with different grists. And again, because we've got so many of our distillers have come from a brewing background, we've got a real kind of strength in that area of using different malts to achieve flavours and building up interesting flavour profiles through doing that. You know, our actual plant isn't well designed to deal with lots of different grists in there. So the bulk of what we do is, you know, our core new make that's just Victorian pale malt. But we like getting stuff through there when we can. It's a bit of extra work, but, you know, everyone's pretty happy to do it when we create fun product out the other end.
Well, moving on to the latest release in the small batch series, Chardonnay Cask. Now, apparently this is the first time Starwood has done aged a whiskey completely in white wine barrels, which I was a little bit surprised to hear.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. We obviously started filling in red wine barrels pretty early on, and that's one of our key, you know, key pillars is that full maturation in Australian red wine barrels. It was pretty interesting early on to experiment with white wine barrels, and we've been getting them into the distillery for quite a few years. They're not as readily available as red wine barrels, so typically a winemaker will start a barrel in white production and then they'll go through to red production after they've made their whites in it. So a lot of the time you don't see them coming out. They're not as sort of stable as red wine barrels as well. Like, they're more delicate flavours that you get in there, and they seem to be more susceptible to staling, oxidation, VA, sort of or any of those barrel taint issues seem to be more pronounced in white wine barrels. But we were really curious about what flavour profile that barrel would be. Like, we love white wines. We love that kind of white fruit character you get, and such a contrast to the red wine barrel flavours. So we've been filling them for a while, but it's been a real struggle to get them to perform as we wanted. And we've done a lot of work both in maturation and blending to get it to where we wanted. And now we're really happy with it. But I think it's an awesome juxtaposition to the red wine barrel matured whiskey. Like, it's got such a lovely, elegant, soft flavor profile and such an emphasis on white fruit and spirit and whiteness and breadiness compared to the red wine barrels, which are a lot redder, brighter, bolder, chocolate and spice. We were lucky to get a couple of parcels of white wine barrels. So there's some out of the Margaret River and some out of the Yarra Valley, both from great winemakers and both using French oak barriques. We've then charred a portion of those barrels on intake. So we'll get them sent to the cooperage. They'll take the heads off, light shave, toast and char. And that was done on a portion of these barrels. It just gives us a bit more depth in blending at the other end, so we can draw on that charred barrel character as well as the fresh barrel character. Yeah, as I said, it's really about barrel quality. And so we're always pretty key on barrel quality and making sure the winemakers know how fresh we need the barrels, any specifications we've got on incoming. And as soon as they come in, the guys will smell them and basically sign them off. We're even more demanding with white wine barrels because they tend to show faults even more pronounced. So it was a real challenge from a liquid perspective. And we've done multiple blends over years trying to get this right. So it's been a long time to get it to where we want it. So it was great to finally bring it together in this blend and get it there. And I think the quality of the barrels, you know, if a white wine maker's releasing these barrels, they're typically of pretty good quality if they haven't ended up going through a red program and spat out the other end. So yeah, really good quality wood, great winemakers, get them in fresh and then just fill them with spirit quickly and watch them go.
To sort of ask a general question that's, you know, kind of relevant across your whole maturation program, how important is, you know, the actual variety of wine that has gone into these barrels in terms of the flavour outcome versus, you know, the original origin of the oak, so French or American oak. The actual Chardonnay character in this case, how much of a role is that playing?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. The barrels get used for a lot of different wines, right? So the winemaker isn't using them once and then we get them. The winemaker uses them for the life of that barrel in the winery. So they might start out in whites or in super premium reds, and then as they get older and more time in the winery, they'll get cycled through that winery's wood inventory program. So sometimes it's hard to get line of sight on the six wines that have been in that barrel, right? That's really challenging. So I think that's the first thing to understand. And we look at it as a bit of a, you know, hierarchy, right, of what the barrel's doing. So probably the most important thing at the start is the size. So that's one of the primary attributes. So when we started, you know, we started with that sort of classic 50-litre, 100-litre recoupered barrels, but we also had 200-litre barrels in the mix. You know, those smaller barrels are giving you more surface area, faster extraction. You can bring a whiskey to market sooner. Now that we're a more mature distillery, we've moved to larger format barrels. We find we get a more balanced maturation profile between wood extraction and spirit character. Plus, it's what the wine industry, which is where we're primarily getting our barrels from, is getting rid of. So it's convenient. So they're either, we use some octaves. So we do your lumber barrels, 100 litres, that's very small intake. Then barriques are quite common for us, the 225 litre or 227 litre barrels, and then hogsheads at 300 litres. We'll also fill some puncheons at 500 litres if we can get them. So that's probably one of the main driving characters of barrel character. And then we kind of tier down to wood type. So what wood is it? And we use a mix of both French and American oak. We'll bring in a bit of Hungarian when we get it, and that comes up in, you know, occasionally. And we've played with some other woods as well, but, you know, we're about 50-50 French to American oak coming in. Coming off that, then you've got what sort of wine was in there previously. The bulk of what we bring in is red wine, right? So a lot of our barrels are coming out of the Yarra Valley, a lot are coming out of the Barossa, and the bulk of it is red wines, whether they're Shiraz and Cab Sav, a lot of in the Barossa, or, you know, Pinot coming out of the Yarra Valley. But like I said, we're seeing multiple wines cycle through these barrels. Then you've got the attributes of what cooperage did the barrels originally come from? What was the toast profile? What forest was the wood? There's all these attributes that the barrel has. And so when we bring a barrel in, you get all this history of the barrel that builds up the flavor profile of that barrel. So it's nice that we've got quite a few barrels in inventory, because it means that we have depth of inventory and depth of cooperages, depths of wine varietals, a mix of French and American oak, you know, and on top of that, we'll cooper or char a portion as well. So a portion we'll send to the cooperage and shave, toast and char those. And so it gives us a real depth to be able to blend from. Most of what we see, like in our core releases in Nova, we don't really talk to the varietal because we can't really do that, but we are doing some cool stuff with some wineries doing collaborations. And we saw that with Yolumba, where we were able to call out working with them. And we like getting in barrels from wineries where we can talk about a specific varietal, a specific region. And so that's something we're excited about in the future.
In order to sort of create the Chardonnay cask release, is that about selecting a group of casks where you did have a kind of a closer understanding of, you know, the history of the barrel and getting a bit more of a clearer sort of Chardonnay lineage in the cask that you're working with?
Yeah, in reference to Chardonnay cask, despite what I just said about that, these are great because the producers are typically making one type of wine a lot, and so you've got really good connection to where those barrels are. So white wine's a bit of an outlier in that regard, in that if you're getting white wine barrels, they've typically been used for one thing, so you can connect to it. And that's what was great about this release, to have a better connection back to the original liquid in there. So depending on wineries, if they don't have a big red program, or they have surplus wood, hasn't been a big vintage, for whatever reason, they'll get rid of white barrels. But white barrels have typically got quite a bit of life left in them. And so that's why wineries would typically cycle them into red maturation.
And so in this case, though, the ones that you managed to get your hands on, do they have quite a clear Chardonnay imprint on them that would give you the flavour outcome, the unique flavour outcome that you're looking for this release?
Yeah, they do. They really do. They've got that lovely kind of brioche buttery character. You get the awesome white fruits. You know, it's a really nice link to Chardonnay to have this whiskey. You can see the imprint clearly on the whiskey and on the maturation profile, French oak, previous fill of that Chardonnay, marrying really well with our spirit. So it is fun to have one that does just speak so clearly to what was in it previously.
It's funny, I've never really thought about it until now, but, you know, are there more lofty ambitions for what role this whiskey could play in Starwood's range? Because when you think about how you've really championed red wine casks, it sort of seems almost like the obvious thing would be to have a white wine cask as well, just so that you can kind of offer people, you know, a glass of white or a glass of red.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. It's something I've banged on about for a long time, and I think everyone at the distillery gets a bit frustrated because it is hard work making the white wine cask stuff compared to red, but the flavour potential that we've got here is really fun. And, you know, trying it when we were blending it, sort of see parallels to more of a bourbon cask, you know, ex-bourbon cask maturation. Like it's a lot softer and it lets the spirit shine through a lot more, and it's just a bit more balanced than the driven red fruit character that you get. It's probably a combination of the wood that the winemakers are choosing in the first place, slightly tighter grain, a bit less availability of wood to extract, and then, yeah, how that translates. So the white fruit character is a lot softer and more delicate than the red fruit. So we're just seeing that being a bit more balanced for the spirit to shine through. You know, every barrel's different, but that's what we're seeing with these barrels.
When you talk about joining Starwood in 2009, speaking to you now, you know, it's really kind of impressive the level of know-how you guys have around wood and the, you know, the different types of woods that you're working with and the blending that goes on to put the whiskies together at the end. From your perspective, how much has that kind of discipline and that understanding of your materials evolved since you've been at Starwood and, you know, since you were at Starwood in the very early days?
Yeah, we've learned a lot. We've learned a lot. You know, we started and we were filling ex McWilliams a pair of barrels, and they're awesome pieces of wood, but they're just not available anymore. And we realized that really early on, that we would need a sustainable wood source. We've always wanted to scale and grow Starwood. We've always wanted to be able to export and kind of take this whiskey to the world. And we knew we needed to find another wood to be able to do that. The obvious choice was bourbon barrels. They make awesome whiskey. They're available. I love them. Like, some of my favorite whiskeys are ex-bourbon cask matured whiskeys. And we could have imported 40-foot containers and just gone at it and made some great whiskey. And we do, and we release it as bourbon cask, and it's in pretty short supply, but when we do, it's fantastic. But we wanted to make a whiskey that was of the place that we were making it, and so we started exploring red wine barrels really early on. There's not really a how-to guide with using Australian red wine barrels or using red wine barrels generally, but we did some early trials. Some of the first we filled were the Alumber Octave barrels. The sizing was right. The availability was fantastic. The quality was awesome, and they're a great group to work with. And they validated for us that we could make awesome whiskey fully matured in red wine barrels. We've learned every step along the way. We've learned about quality of incoming barrels, which is paramount. We've learned what not to do. We've seen the faults. We've seen the issues in the distillery. And, you know, you can turn some really good spirit really bad if you don't have a good handle on how to use that barrel correctly. It's sort of hard to stuff up an ex-bourbon cask. Like, you probably just needed to leave it in the barrel for longer. But you can really stuff up whiskey in a wine barrel if you're not paying attention or don't know the pitfalls. You need to have a winemaker that's going to get you the barrel in good condition. They understand what you're going to do with it, and they're aligned to that trajectory for the barrel. And usually if you give a winemaker a bottle of whiskey, they're pretty keen and they get it. They get the vision, and they're really happy to have the barrel have another life before it either has beer matured in it or it gets cut in half, have a tree grow in it, right? It's a lovely circular economy piece, and it makes everyone feel good, and it makes good booze. So what's not to love about that? But if you get barrels, and the winemakers had them sitting out the back in South solution for 6 months, or they've been dry sitting out the back for a while, or they just didn't clean them very well and they were coming out of vintage and they kind of move them onto you. You get them come in and they've either got VA or Brett or mold or any sort of fault, right? And if you don't pick that up before you put 225 litres of new make in it, you just wasted that new make. So intake's really key. Working with a winemaker is really key. It's not as bulletproof as a ex-spirit barrel. The great thing about ex-spirit barrels is they've got sterilant in them. There's no micro issues. There's really not many taint issues with those. But as soon as you move to beer or wine with that lower ABV, it's a much more great environment for harboring bacterial contamination, things like that. So that's where it goes wrong. And then you've got to manage extraction. You don't want over-extraction. You've got to manage all these things so you get good presentation of the previous fill character, good presentation of the oak, and then your spirit sits in there really nice and it creates a, you know, well-matured, well-rounded, kind of balanced spirit. I think we're getting good at it now.
Yeah, and how variable is the trajectory of the spirit in each cask? Considering all the work you're doing around selecting the right casks to begin with, does that then mean that you're getting a degree of uniformity around how the maturation process happens, or is it still, are there still a lot of surprises where it's like, oh gosh, we better pull that out of that cask pretty soon, maybe move it into something that's less active or something like that? Are these the kind of decisions that you have to make?
Yeah, there's a lot less surprises now, right, which is good. I think we're moving forward. But the other good thing is I think we've got really good winery partners that we work with, and they understand what we want, and kind of we've got good frequency of ordering, right? So it turns over. And if you've got that frequency and kind of dialed in, it makes it a lot easier. We'll check everything after 2 years being in barrel and make sure it's on track. So that's kind of our checkpoint to go, is this whiskey on track with where we expect it to be, or do we need to move it to a different barrel, or is it going to go to a different stream than we thought? You know, do we want to move to a single barrel program, or is this potentially going to be a Fortis barrel, or whatever it is, right? But we're finding now, through having a good quality program and understanding what's incoming, that it's a lot more consistent now. But even still, you still get barrels that come in and they just perform completely differently to what you expect, and you can have two barrels on the same cradle from the same winery, same cooperage, same vintage, same spirit went in there, same time, same storage environment, and they're just completely different whiskies, right? Different extraction profile, different flavor profile, and that's the beauty of blending. You know, you can bring these different flavors together and then marry them and make a better, more harmonious whiskey out the other end. So we embrace that variability, but ideally it's a controlled amount of variability.
Well, most importantly, Sam, where do people find the Small Batch series? I think we touched on this earlier, but just to make clear for people.
Yeah, it's the best place to pick it up if you're keen to try out. The Chardonnay cask is starwood.com.au on our web store. We'll get that out. Our brand home's currently undergoing some renovations, but will be open again in April, and then you could also pick it up from the bar there. And you could do a tour and have a look around and have a cocktail while you're there as well, or just have a chat to one of the distillers. So either way, yeah, limited release. So just available on the website or at the distillery.
Okay. All right, no worries. Well, Sam, great to finally chat to you on the show. And, yeah, best of luck with Small Batch this year. I look forward to seeing what else is in the pipeline.
Awesome, James. Thanks for the chat. Really good to be on here.